She is Persephone. The first time Cori throws herself into the river Styx, she is reckless and stubborn and feels like she has so little left to lose. Only an overbearing mother she yearns to escape. The first time Cori throws herself into the river Styx, she fights and swims and survives. She is picked up on the shore and carried to safety in Hades' arms. The second time Cori throws herself into the river Styx, she is reckless and stubborn and feels like she has everything to lose. She lets the water take her, and she drowns. The second time Cori throws herself into the river Styx, it kills her. Cori wakes up after falling unconscious, while being carried by the king of the underworld. Her skin is fully healed, no longer blistering and burning. She's naked under the soft blankets, but she was naked when she dove into the river, so she's not too worried about it. "I didn't know you were a goddess," someone says, and she turns her head to see a little girl sitting by her bedside with black skin and gray eyes and hair. She's glaring at her. "I wouldn't have tried to kill you if I'd known. You shouldn't touch my water. It's not good for you. It will kill you. It doesn't care what you are." "It did not kill Achilles," Cori says, pushing herself up so the blanket falls to her waist. The young lady Styx huffs and gets to her feet, pushing open the long wardrobe on the other side of the room. "It did, actually. What my river takes, it keeps." Cori raises an eyebrow. Styx doesn't explain further, only places a dark blue gown on the bed. "Hecate put some of her old things in here for you. She's taller and thinner than you are, but you're a goddess. You can make it work."
"I can," Cori agrees, amused. She pushes herself out of bed, and her hair falls into her face. Her hair has been dark brown her whole life. She strides over to the wardrobe and pulls it open, staring at herself in the mirror. Her hair has turned pure, snowy white. The hair on her head, of course, but the rest of it, too. Her eyebrows, the light hair on her arms and legs, going down her navel, the hair between her legs, all of it white.
"You're lucky nothing worse happened," Styx scolds. "My river usually does much worse than that."
Cori touches one of her new, pale eyebrows. "That is an excellent point, Lady Styx." With some clever magic, Cori pulls on the now perfectly fitting gown. Hecate doesn't tend to bother with them. Only dresses up if there's some sort of celebration that requires her attendance, something that hasn't happened in a long time, ever since she irritated Zeus and Poseidon, to the point they called for her head on a spike. The gown is old, even by their standards, but it is beautifully crafted, stars plucked from the heavens and sewn into the bodice, waves from the seven seas curling around the long skirt.
"This is very valuable," she says. "Is Hecate sure she would like me to have it?"
Styx shrugs. "She said it was a young woman's dress, and however she may look, she's not a young woman anymore. It's my favorite dress of hers. I was quite cross that she gave it to you, but I did almost kill you, so I suppose that's fair enough."
"Ah," Cori says, "not quite sure how to respond to that."
"I see." Styx grins at her and grabs her hand. The child goddess's skin is freezing to the touch, but Cori doesn't flinch back out of fear of being rude.
"Come with me now. Hades wants to see you."
The girl leads her through the twisting hallways to a polished wooden door. It's not the throne room where Cori thought that the girl would take her. She's seen the grand inner chambers of Poseidon and Zeus's homes before, of the lesser gods, even, and Cori braces herself for something just as grandiose and intimidating. Styx opens the door and pushes her inside before vanishing. Cori blinks and looks around. The room is smaller than she expected. It's lined with shelves packed with scrolls, and mounted on the opposite wall is a large map that's constantly shifting and changing. And it takes her almost a full minute of looking at it to realize it's a map of the underworld.
You're looking better.
Cori's eyes snap down, and it's only then that she notices the figure of Hades, king of the underworld, hunched over his desk, his hair pulled in a messy low ponytail, and there are dark bags under his eyes. He's in a simple black chiffon, one no more presumptuous than any mortal noble would wear. He's the most unassuming, unremarkable thing in an already unassuming and unremarkable room. Suddenly, she feels overdressed. Thank you, she says, not knowing what else to say. She feels awkward, almost, in front of him, which isn't something she's ever felt with anyone. She wants to climb into his lap and rest her head against his shoulder. She wants to force him into some proper clothes for a king. She wants to put him to bed and make him sleep until he loses those bruises under his eyes. She's never wanted to do any of those things for someone before. She doesn't even know him. Although, she knows he came for her. That he found an intruder into his realm and picked her up and soothed her, carried her to safety and washed her of the corrosive water of the Styx. He placed her in his palace and did not touch her as so many other men would have touched her. So perhaps she does know him, at least a little. He rests his chin on his hand while he looks at her.
Hermes came with a message from your mother, demanding your return.
She doesn't even have time to panic before he continues.
I denied her. If she wishes to speak to me in person, I told her she is welcome to step into my realm herself.
She won't do that, Cori says. She fears your realm. She fears how her power means nothing in your domain. Cori had never known her mother to fear anything. Except the land of the dead. She'd grown up thinking Hades must be a hulking, formidable figure to pull fear from her mother's breast. But that's clearly not the case. He smiles, and it's the first hint of sharpness she's seen from him.
I know. There will be consequences, of course, but those are my concern. You are a guest of my realm, goddess of spring. Walk where you please and do as you please. No one will stop you.
He's already looking back down at his papers, eyebrows drawing together as he scratches out a series of numbers and rewrites them. It's a clear dismissal, but Cori can't bring herself to move. She's never met this man before, yet he stands against her mother, yet he welcomes her into his realm. Yet he permits unrestricted access to his home. Yet he grants her every freedom he's able. Thank you, she says again. He gives an absent nod, already reaching for another scroll. She leaves as quietly as she came. Hades is unsurprised when the first wave of deaths occur. Charon is run ragged in his efforts to ferry them across the river. It's made all the harder because Styx keeps her river churning at a fast pace to dissuade any of the impatient souls from attempting to swim across.
This is only the beginning, he warns them.
Styx pulls on Charon's robe, and the ferryman lifts her and settles her onto his hip, even though his arms are shaking from navigating the boat across her river.
Demeter's wrath is far-reaching.
Is the girl worth all this trouble? Hades smiles and tugs on the hood of the man's robe.
You were.
Styx yawns and snuggles into Karen's side. I like her. We'll keep up. Don't worry. Hades can't help but worry. Styx and Karen are young yet, and he hates to do this to them. He won't go and confront Demeter, however. That's not his battle to fight. For now, the best thing he can do for Cori is weather the storm of her mother's anger. The best thing he can do for Cori is give her time. So that's exactly what he'll do. He goes to Hecate after, a map clenched in his fist.
Time to expand? She asks when she sees him.
It will be, he says grimly. It's better if we can get ahead of it.
Hecate doesn't disagree. They spend the next 3 days planning it, and a week hence they'll pull the edges of his realm wider. If they do it right, it will almost double the size of the underworld. If they do it wrong, well, it's best that they don't. He returns to the castle exhausted. He wants to go straight to bed, but he should review the lists of the dead so that they can all be sent to the right parts, to the areas of his realm that will fit them best. If he leaves them in the waiting area too long, not only will they get restless, but it will fill up, especially with the volume they're going through. A full waiting area tends to end in disaster, restless souls causing disasters even when they don't mean to. He walks through his palace, souls and other beings inclining their heads as he passes. He's already resigned himself to falling asleep at his desk when he pushes the door open and sees a head of white curls bent over his desk.
Lady Cori, he says, surprised.
He'd given her access to all parts of his realm. He still hadn't expected to find her in his office.
Is something wrong?
She's got ink smudges on her cheeks, and her purple dress is wrinkled. I'm nearly finished, she says, eyes unfocused. You'll want to check it over, of course, but I'm a quick study. I'm quite certain I've gotten it right. Hades doesn't understand. He walks over to her, and spread across his desk are the new names of the dead, and Cori has written a number next to each name. The numbers are the same that flash across the map hung on the wall, each one corresponding to a sector of his realm. There are scrolls and scrolls of names that are the product of Demeter's temper tantrum, ones that had built up while Hades had worked with Hecate to ensure that there was enough room for everyone. All but the one currently spread out on his desk is complete.
You must have been working on this for days, he says blankly. You didn't need to do that.
She smiles at him. She has such a pretty smile. You didn't need to let me stay, or shield me from my mother.
That's not the same thing, he says.
He had decided he was going to help her. That didn't mean she needed to help him in return. She reaches up, her fingertips lightly dragging against the delicate skin beneath his eyes. You're exhausted. Go to sleep. I'll finish this up.
You don't need to, he says again.
And he can't stop looking at her. He doesn't know why. She tucks his hair behind his ear and says, I want to. Get some sleep. He walks back to his room, but all he can think of is Cori's fingertips on his skin. The weeks drag into months, and the death toll grows ever higher. Throughout it all, Cori is there. She's at the river's edge to help unload the new souls from Karen's boat. She's there when Styx falls into an exhausted sleep, letting the girl rest with her head pillowed on Cordy's lap. She's there every day by Hades' side, effortlessly shouldering half the work to keep his realm running, to keep everything smooth.
You know, Hecate says, sitting across from Cori as she pores over the map of the realm and the population counts of different areas. This is the most successful seduction attempt of Hades I've ever seen.
I'm not seducing him. I'm helping, she says absently. Then looks up at her. Wait, is he seduced?
Because I could be, if he's interested. Corey hadn't known she could want someone before Hades. The thought of touching Hermes or Apollo curdles her stomach. But Hades, that excites her. She's never felt this way before. But she didn't think Hades felt the same. He doesn't touch her, doesn't look at her. They spend almost every minute of every day together, and not once has he sent her a covetous glance. Then again, if he were the type of man to covet her, she wouldn't love him. Because she does love him. She's known that since the beginning. Hecate laughs and taps her on the nose.
My dear, he's walking on clouds, even as your very presence threatens to plunge this realm into ruin. I would consider him quite thoroughly seduced.
Does he love me? She asks. And she sounds young, and it is a childish question. But it's important. If Hades loves her, she has a plan. It's a plan that's been lurking in the back of her mind since that very first day, since Styx let something slip that Corey is sure she didn't mean to. But she won't do it if Hades doesn't love her. She won't repay his kindness with betrayal if he won't forgive her for it. Hecate is silent for a long time. She sounds surprised when she says,
"You know, Corey, I think he does."
Hades loves her. She loves him. There is a marriage in her future if she does this right. But it will be no gilded cage. She's tired of looking to other people to save her, looking to Apollo, to Hermes, to Hades. She's going to save herself. Corey hasn't used her powers here, unsure of how spring would conflict with death. She does it now, in the middle of the night, when Hades slumbers. There's no life in the earth surrounding the palace, but it does not worry her. She is the daughter of Demeter. She is the goddess of spring. Life from death is what she does best. She takes off her shoes and digs her feet into the ground, closes her eyes, and uses every ounce of her power to turn this barren land into something else. The trees are first, great, towering things that fill the edges of the courtyard. Then grass, then flowers in every color she can imagine, all in full bloom. Shrubs and rose bushes, delicate ivy crawling up the sides of Hades' palace. She covers it all in flora, in life. Then she falls to her knees, pushes her hands into the earth, and makes something new. It's small, but it's there. She rejects all that her mother has made and, for the first time, makes something completely on her own. It's barely a tree, barely as tall as she is. It blooms red, and she forces it to age. The blossoms grow into heavy, round fruits, just as red as the blossoms. It is only a single tree in the middle of the courtyard. She hopes it will be enough. Lady Styx, she says, I need you. The child goddess appears before her, rubbing at her eyes. Her yawn cuts off midway through as she gapes at the lush garden that now exists where before there was only barren earth.
Did you do this?
She asks, looking down at the kneeling goddess. Corey holds out her dirt-covered hands. They're trembling. She's parched and dizzy with the effort it took to make a garden in a place where living things aren't meant to thrive, to exist at all, really. Styx takes them in her own cool hands.
Do you trust me, Lady Styx?
The child goddess nods. Good. Corey sighs, nearly drooping in relief. I need you to do me a favor. I'm going to jump in your river.
You can't, Styx says immediately, gray eyes wide. You're too weak. It will kill you.
Cordy smiles.
Yes, it will.
Hades is pulled from his bed and thrown against the stone wall with such force that, if he were not who he is, he would be dizzy from it. He blinks up at Hermes towering over him. Charon shimmers into existence behind the messenger god, scythe raised to behead him.
Don't, Hades said.
You dare tell me what to do after what you've done? Hermes hisses.
I wasn't talking to you, he says and points.
Hermes turns. Charon still has the scythe raised.
Why didn't you stop her? What's the point of you if you simply let her die?
Hermes reaches out a hand. Hades doesn't know what Hermes is planning to do, and he's not interested in finding out. He's up in an instant, grabbing Hermes' wrist before he can touch Charon, and holding it just tight enough that his bones creak in protest.
None of that now, he says mildly. What's all the fuss about?
You need to come to the river, Charon says. The rest of the 12 gods are there. They are angry.
Demeter as well?
He asks. He's surprised. He didn't think anything could entice Demeter to face him once more. Hermes tries to pull his arm back, but Hades doesn't let him. Charon is still standing within hitting distance.
Of course she's here! Her daughter is dead!
He stares.
What are you talking about? Cordy is fine. She's here.
My lord, Charon says quietly. And this is impossible. Even if Cordy had died, she would simply end up here. There's no true death unless he wills it. Unless...
Styx!
He roars. She doesn't come. For the first time, Styx does not come when he calls. Come with me, Charon begs. Please, my lord, come with me. Hades goes. They go through the courtyard, and he's so astounded by the changes that his legs forget to move at the sight of it all. There's a garden in the land of the dead. Flowers bloom, tree branches hang low with heavy fruit. But he's drawn to something else. There's a small tree right in the center that almost looks as if it's glowing. He reaches out and touches one of the round red fruits that he's never seen before. And as soon as his fingers press against the firm skin, it drops into his hand. Charon tugs at his arm, desperate. Please, my lord, we don't have time. He nods, absently tucking the fruit in a pocket of his robe, and following Charon to the edge of the river. Hermes, as the messenger god, is the only one able to enter his realm without his permission. Across the gray and angrily churning river stand all the others. Apollo, Artemis, Hestia, Athena, Hera, Poseidon, Hephaestus, Aphrodite. And then, at the end, stand Zeus and Demeter. Hermes next to Apollo, arms crossed.
What have you done?
Demeter spits, and Hades is sure that Zeus's hand on her arm is all that prevents the goddess from attempting to leap across the river and tear his head from his neck.
What did you do to her?
Hades, Hestia says quietly. We all felt it. How did she die?
Demeter howls and leaps at Hestia. Poseidon stands between them and holds her back, an utterly bored look on his face.
Brother, an explanation, if you please. Some of us have our own realms to attend to. Lady Styx, he says, forcing a calmness he doesn't feel into his voice. Please come here.
There's a moment when nothing happens. And if she makes him track her down within his own realm, he will be cross with her. But then she appears in front of him, shoulders hunched nearly to her ears, her gray eyes wet.
I only did as she asked. Don't be mad at me, she hiccups and says, quieter.
Don't be mad at me.
All at once, the entirety of the fury that had been building in Hades' chest leaves him. The sorrow is just as strong, but no matter what, getting angry at Styx will solve nothing. He bends down on his knee and reaches out to touch her shoulders. She flinches away from him, and he pauses.
Lady Styx, he says softly, I would never hurt you. You know that, don't you?
She nods, a quick, sharp motion. He slowly holds out his hands, waiting, and doesn't bother to hide his relief when she places her cold, trembling hands in his.
Did Cory jump in your river?
Styx nods. It's what Hades expected, but he has to close his eyes against the tidal wave of grief that threatens to overwhelm him. The river Styx is the barrier between life and death, and as such, it is neither. Those who die in the river do not go to the underworld. They are simply unmade, their bodies dissolved and their souls broken into a thousand lost pieces.
Why?
She said it was the only way.
Styx looks anxiously into the depths of her river.
She's running out of time. I told her she didn't have a lot of time, that she had to do it quickly, that I would not be able to help her.
Hades doesn't understand.
What is she talking about?
Apollo demands. Hephaestus rubs his wrists.
Styx, are you saying that's impossible? She wouldn't have enough time. She wouldn't be able to even think to do it.
Just then, cutting across the air,
I hadn't expected an audience quite this large.
Everyone turns towards the voice. It's Cory. Her eyes are now as white as her hair, and she's almost transparent. Across her body are tiny cracks of pulsating gray, places where she's used the clay of the river to push her soul back together again.
You did it!
Styx cries, running to the edge of the river.
Thanks to you. She smiles. Your river tore me apart, as it must, but you did a very good job of making sure enough of me stayed together so that I could find all of my own pieces.
What are you playing at?
Demeter snaps, eyes wild.
Get out of that river this instant!
She can't,
Hades says, heart clenching in his chest.
She isn't alive, not really. She's simply the river. She's simply of the river. If she leaves it, she will be of nothing.
Is a cursed river spirit the only escape she could see? It's a clever one. Demeter won't dare touch her. Can't touch her. For all that bound Cory to her mother died along with her. But it is not a life. She walks across the surface of the river until she's almost close enough for Demeter to touch.
I am Cory no longer, she says, face impassive. I am of your body no longer. My power is not from you any longer. I am not something you can control any longer.
No, Demeter snarls. Now you are dead. Is it worth it?
The woman who used to be Cory smiles.
Yes.
She turns and walks back across the river to Hades. She holds out her hands.
Did you bring it?
Bring what?
He asks, mystified. Styx pushes into his side and digs into his pocket. He lets her, and she pulls out the strange red fruit he'd taken from the equally strange tree.
Here!
She tears it in half. In the fruit are bright seeds, the color and shine of blood. She meets his eyes, and her smile softens.
Sorry about this. You're going to have to learn to share.
What are you talking about?
He asks. He hasn't felt this hopelessly confused in several millennia. The woman who used to be Cory takes one of the fruit halves from Styx.
I am the goddess of spring. Life from death is all I know.
She bites into the fruit, and the juice drips down her chin like blood.
Her eyes are the first to change, no longer a terrifying white, but a warm brown. Her skin darkens and color bleeds into her hair again, her curls turning the same bright red as the fruit. The gray clay flecks off her skin, and it's whole and unblemished. She steps from the river onto the shore. She does not crumple. She does not dissolve into dust. She tosses her hair over her shoulder, and with a twist of her wrist, a red gown covers her body. She lifts her skirts and stamps her feet into the ground, laughing. Trees sprout up around them. Flowers bloom along the water's edge. There is nothing that happens in this realm without his permission, but he couldn't stop this if he tried. "I am Persephone," she declares, eyes bright. "I am queen of the underworld." Her power is now tied up within his realm. The roots of the trees she grew are far-reaching. She's twisted the rules of her power and his, and stolen part of his realm out from under him, found every loophole and escaped her mother's grasp by becoming something she could never touch or understand, by becoming something that was already a part of her all along. If he hadn't fallen in love with her already, he would now.
"Might you need a king?"
he murmurs, stepping closer. The other gods are yelling from across the river, but he can't bring himself to care.
"Ruler of the underworld is such a heavy burden to bear alone."
She grins, all teeth, and when he gets close enough, she reaches a hand around the back of his neck and pulls him down until she can cover his mouth with her mouth. His arm curls around her waist, and she lets him support her weight as he continues kissing her. As she continues kissing him, as they begin the rest of their lives as king and queen of the underworld. Half of the gods across the river are laughing, the other half are furious, but Hades and Persephone are unconcerned. They are gods. There's no need for them to stop and breathe. They can continue standing on the river's edge and kissing until everyone gets bored and leaves. No matter how long it takes. Hades thinks this is a most excellent beginning. Later, she agrees to spend half the year with her mother to cool her temper. But her grin doesn't leave. It is her choice. It is a decision she makes that neither her mother nor Hades can go against. She is Persephone, daughter of Demeter, queen of the underworld, wife of Hades, goddess of spring. She is Persephone. All the choices she makes are her own.